Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyflip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Tello di Borghesis.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, both people. They're happy because they're not getting hurricaned on right now. Hurricaned on? We are located, as you well know, north of Tampa, along the coast, a town called Newport Richey. That's why Mike actually has moved. He's over just north of Orlando, and Mike is in the path. He is concerned. He is actually trying to hunker down tonight. So he has not joined me on this broadcast because he is, well, hunkering down. We haven't had to yet. We are, well, they're saying tomorrow, late tonight, tomorrow is going to be the bad day. And then by Saturday afternoon, it should clear up. The football games, the state football games, have not been canceled as of this morning anyway. Yeah, USF plays at noon. University of South Florida plays at noon tomorrow at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Raymond James Stadium. And last I heard, Miami, University of Miami was still playing, as is University of Florida and all those. They're all home games here in the state of Florida. So those are all still go. All the schools in this area are closed tomorrow. I see this area, Pasco County, which is a county we're in, and then the counties below us where Tampa and St. Petersburg are located, and also north of us, too. So those are the ones I know of. Those are all canceled, and there may be even more. These are just the ones I'm familiar with. So it is – people are – excuse me. People are actually in this coast – starting to be cautious, starting to be careful. The governor of Florida, Governor Rick Scott, has declared a state of emergency for all of Florida that has been in effect for oh, geez, a couple of 3 days now. It's been a while that they've had this in effect. What this means is that we're in a state of emergency. But I found out something today. I didn't know this before. When the governor declares a state of emergency, what that actually does is if we have a tree fall, we can take a picture of the tree, go out and buy a chainsaw, and chop up the tree and send the picture of the tree and our receipt for the chainsaw in to the state, and they will pay for it, the chainsaw, that is. That's really one of the things that state of emergency does for us. I never knew that, so that's sort of cool. I already have a chainsaw, though, but if I'd known that, I would have held off on buying a chainsaw, but I've had it for a number of years, so it wouldn't have done me any good anyway because I wanted it before now. But that's one of the things state of emergency does for us. And it gets everybody on alert. The governor says, move, get out of the area. Get away from the coast, get away from these areas. It is not wise to stay there. You have plenty of time. Don't wait till the last minute. And it is. People are coming over here. I was working today at the winery, and the only customers I had were from the other coast. Everybody was coming over, and they've seen the winery, and they stopped by. So I was busy today with East Coast visitors, and they all came over and stopped by the winery and all that. They're going to get a little bit of rain and some wind, but it's not going to be like it's going to hit on the other coast. So they evacuated like they were warned to do, and good for them, instead of waiting until this evening. Speaking of which, coming home, it normally is a 35-minute trip for me, maybe 40 if it's busy. It took me an hour and a half today coming home. People are coming from the east to the west coast. Hotels or motels are filled everywhere. They are packed just about everywhere over here because people's getting away from the other side of the state. So, it's nasty out there, but we will survive. We will go through it. We will do the program tonight. I'm probably getting an hour of program. I got things to tell you. We didn't do a show last week because we had our Pasco Pet Fest last Saturday. Wow, what a good festival that was. We were it took me all week. I worked on the yard, I worked on stuff, and I had to get stuff taken care of and straightened up and cleaned up and moved and the moss out of the trees and some branches and trimmed down and all sorts of different things. And so I spent the week. The field next to the winery was actually cut, and good job on cutting that and getting that all cleaned up and everything for parking, since we had everything around the winery full of vendors. We had something like 75, 78 vendors. I'm not sure exactly the number that we ended up with, but we had a bunch of vendors, adoption agencies, all sorts of pet adoption agencies, and just a bunch of, I didn't bring home the menu, the book. I should have brought that home. I could have told you even more about it, but oh well. But we had all sorts of vendors. We had adoption agencies from all sorts of different groups. We had food. We had 75, 78 vendors. So it was really busy. Silent auction. People were thrilled and happy. One of the exciting things that happened that day was my engineer, my wife, actually a friend of hers who just moved from Oregon back to Florida, stopped by the winery and saw her for the first time in 30 years. So that was exciting for her, and a good day for that. And we made some good money for the charities that we were putting on the event for, which is always a good thing and always the purpose of it. So any of you who attended it, thank you very much. It was you made it a success. And if you didn't attend it, save the date, October the 7th, 2017. That's coming up. We'll be doing our next Pet Fest on that date. Also, this spring, we have Wolfstock, which is not quite as big, but pretty near. So mark those dates and keep those in mind. We obviously will be talking more about Wolfstock as the date gets closer. And then the Pet Fest will be coming up again next October. So, but it was a good event, and we had a great time, and it was good. Glad it's over, though. It was a lot of work. So we didn't do a show last week because of that. I was busy, actually, last week, still doing yard work and stuff. But we're doing the show this week, even in spite of the hurricane, calling it a hurricane party, if you will. We're not really getting hit over on this coast yet. And like I said, it's supposed to be later this evening and tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. But I've got some stuff to pass on to you as always. Mike, if you out there and you happen to hear this, stay hunkered down. Keep yourself safe. So let's get some things to talk about tonight. Just odds and ends, as always. No guests. I've been working every day. I apologize for not having guests, but when I work every day, actually guests do take time to schedule and book, and so I haven't had a chance. That doesn't mean it's not going to forever be guests again. We will be doing guests. I just need to start working out a way to do it. Got a vineyard and winery for sale. Now, this is in a book called The Grapevine. It's just a little informational source for vineyards and stuff and for wineries. Pretty neat little book. It's a magazine, comes out of Iowa. But on the back page, they have a full-page ad of a winery for sale. I want to pass this on to you simply because we always like to do this. Excuse me, my voice is a little nasty tonight, so I'll excuse myself for coughs often here. Eagle City Winery was completed in 2000 and has won over 100 medals in international wine competition. Eagle City Winery and Vineyard is located by the, now I'm reading this to you so I'm not just, you know, saying, it's located by the beautiful and historic Iowa River Valley near Iowa Falls, Iowa. Package purchase includes the business, winemaking equipment, wine inventory, award-winning recipes for 20 wines, the winery building, vineyard, shelter house, and about 2 acres of land. We'll consider selling the business, equipment, and inventory without the land, building, vineyard, and shelter house. So I don't know. I mean, since it's all right there together, I don't know how they would do that, but they would consider doing that. It is located at, Iowa River Valley near Iowa Falls. For more information, you can get a hold of the owner and winemaker, Dr. Ken Groninga. 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 He is, like I say, the owner and winemaker. Call him at 641-648-3669. Or you can also email him, winemaker@eaglecitywinery.com. Check out the website at www.eaglecitywinery.com. Nice little place. They got a picture over here, a little barn tasting room and all that stuff. Nice little place. So if you're looking at buying a winery and not in California where it's outrageously expensive, here's one for you in Iowa. Doing some good stuff in Iowa, actually. The wines and stuff like that in Iowa are really, really quite nice. So gives you an opportunity to get away from the Napa price or the California price and get into something that is good and a little bit more in the Midwest, away from that expensive West Coast and the droughts and everything that's going on there. So, key winemakers endorse Stelvin closures. Stelvin, I've explained before, is the screw cap. Key winemakers have endorsed Amcor's portfolio of Stelvin closures, advocating the quality, technical performance, and design flexibility of the product. This is from a little news bit out of Beverage World magazine this month. Actually, last month. It's September. This is October now. Testimonials from prominent global vintners in both Europe and the United States highlight the closure's benefits and their ability to maintain the purity and consistency of bottled wines. With Irene, ow, that hurt. Irene, if you're listening, sorry, but some of these big winemakers are actually saying that Stelwin is good. Which, by the way, Irene, if you are listening, Irene King, who has been a guest on the show out of Las Vegas, it's time to get you back on again. Let's talk to you again about, you know, your studies and what you've tested on and all that lately. So, housed on Encore's new dedicated Stelwin website, the comments show other winemakers and bottlers exactly what they can expect if they make the switch to Stelwin or Screwcap. Amongst those to endorse Encore's closures are Bernard Ott, from Weingut Ott, Austria, Dr. Martin Tisch from Weingut Tisch in Germany, and Kevin Wellenborg from Vina Ropos Winery in the United States. So, you know, hey, they're saying it's good. I don't know. You know, you got the pros and cons and all that other good stuff when it starts coming to screw caps. So Irene is a definite con when it comes to screw cap. And there are those out there who are pro screw cap. So, you know, I don't know. Let's see. There's my note. I knew I had another note here to read you, and I had to dig it out. Usually have an opportunity for Mike to do this stuff, and we haven't talked in a couple of weeks because of the hurricane. Oh, my engineer just now brought me my evening wine. I didn't have a chance to do it. Excuse me. What? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It smells very good. Well, let that sit there for a minute before I attack it. I think she's bringing me the bottle. Yes, she is. There it is. Yeah, I did smell it. It had the classic cab smell to it. And that's always nice when you get a wine that is a cab that has that actually smells like it was supposed to smell like. Excuse me while I sip. A little bit dry. I was expecting more fruit. This is a 2014 Chilean wine. It's Camas del Dragon. It's from Valley Central, Cabernet Sauvignon. It states on the bottle, "The Andes, which run the length of Chile, are often referred to by Chileans as the dragon's spine. So we like to refer to our tough, sturdy vineyards at the base of the mountains as Is Camas del Dragon, or Dragon Scales. Appropriately, this layered and nuanced wine is full of flavor with ripe cherries, dark plums, silky spice notes, and fine tannins. Pairs magically with seared tri-tip or garlic-seasoned chicken." It is. I mean, the dark notes to it is really nice. It does have some pleasant tannins, not overpowering. The plumminess I'm picking up, I'm not getting cherry yet. It might bring it out as a set here for a few minutes. So, now I'm getting the darkness of plum and a little bit of tobacco nose to it. That's something that you'll pick up every once in a while in calves. This one seems to have it. So, Dragon, D-R-A-G-O-N, Dragon, the Chilean wine. So if you see that in the store, give it a try. We picked up the Cabernet Sauvignon, and I think they have a couple other brands too. So, all right. Good. I'm glad I didn't have a wine. I sit down, like I say, it's crazy with working and everything else. So, Let's see what we got to talk about. We got things we can talk to you about tonight. All sorts of different things. New stuff and stuff to pass on to you. Hope you like the information I pass on to you. I just things that I find that are interesting and I want to share with you. And therefore, I do. And I hope you find it interesting and something that you go, oh, I didn't know that. This is something that there was a series of these, and I'm gonna pull all these up here. Most expensive wine. This is the most expensive wine in California. You know, there's a lot of very expensive wines floating around all over the place. But California, the most expensive wines in California. Did I talk to you about this? I'm not sure. Now, see, this is where Mike really would help me on this because he would be able to tell me if I've talked about this. And I almost think maybe I have. No, maybe I haven't. Oh, well, here we are. Most expensive California wine list. It's not a list based purely on price, although price is really right there. But each vintage and, you know, it's a collectibles and secondary market, and it has to have a minimum of 4 vintages available before they put it on this list. So it's not just like, oh, this came out the first time, they're charging, you know, $5,000 for it, and so therefore it is actually one that has been proven that it is a good wine. First one, this was initially released in 2010. It's the Screaming Eagles Sauvignon Blanc. Yes, a Sauvignon Blanc. Its retailing price is $3,706. That's excluding tax. It's the 2010 release. The wine originally was selected, created for Mel List customers and restaurants, and it was only 300 bottles made. The low volume is also one of the reasons why the price up there. The Sauvignon Blanc grapes are grown on a 2-acre plot in Oakville, Screaming Eagles Oakville Vineyard. And no other grape varieties was able to thrive in the tiny plot of the clay terrain there, except for Sauvignon Blanc. The reason why Screaming Eagles Sauvignon Blanc is the most expensive wine in the world, says the president and founder, Leo Finn III. Quote, supply and demand is traded among the wealthy who want the prestige of saying, I have one of the 300 bottles made, end quote. So, Screaming Eagle, Sauvignon Blanc. Sauvignon Blanc, $3,706. Number two, Screaming Eagle again. This one is almost invariably told by people who never taste it that Screaming Eagle is a legend. Robert Parker has largely contributed toward this legendary status because the first award was Screaming Eagle's 92 Cabernet, 99 points, calling it one of the greatest young Cabernets he had ever tasted. And since then, the Screaming Eagle Cabernet has continuously scored very, very high. And that is why the price of this particular wine is going for $2,890. These are all without tax, by the way. Next one, Harlan Estate, Napa Valley. The proprietor, who is William Harlan, bought his Oakville hillside. You notice Oakville is jumping right in here. Oakville is a great little area for growing. In fact, it's one of the first areas you come to when you start coming north into Napa Valley. Vineyard 1984 with a view of creating a California first growth. He cleared 4 hectares or 10 acres for the planting of predominantly Cabernet Sauvignon. He did put in some Merlot and Cabernet Franc and Petit Verdot grapes. The first commercially available vintage was in 1990, and he released it in 96. He attributes the complexity of the wine to the wildlands surrounding the vineyard, and along with the soils that are partly sedimentary and partly volcanic. He says the unusual diversity of the aspect with northern, southern, eastern, and western exposures. Five of the estate's vintages have now achieved 100 points from Parker, which now causes the price to average around $825 a bottle. Schrader Cellars Old Sparky Cabernet Sauvignon. This comes from the Bechstoffer to Callan Vineyard in Napa. 100% Cabernet. It is average price right now selling for $731. It dates back to 1868 when they first acquired the land, and it was named for the Greek to Callan, meaning highest beauty. Along with the soils and mineral drainage, it's perfect creation, they say, for Cabernet Sauvignon, which gives it such a wonderful flavor and taste of blackberries and toasted oats after French oak barrel aging and all of that. So, no, you took it. This needs to be topped off when you get a chance. My engineer is hobbling around here. She's got sciatica and back and all sorts of stuff bothering her right now. So we try not to bump into her or she'll fall over and not be able to get up. Number five, Scarecrow Cabernet Sauvignon. This is out of Rutherford, 180-acre parcel in Rutherford. The winery's first venture was in 2003. Received 98 points from Parker, which continues to score high. In 2013, Parker gave the Scarecrow Cabernet a 100 score. This is rare and highly collectible wine. Only 500 cases are produced annually, and its average price is around $660. So it is a rare collectible. Dana. Estate Lotus Vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon out of Napa Valley. Dana, D-A-N-A, pronounced Dana, D-A-H-N-A-H, Dana. It says so right here. That is the Sanskrit word for the spirit of generosity. Growing on a little 5-acre lot in Lotus Vineyards in Crystal Valley. Oh, excuse me. It's perched on 1,200 feet above sea level in the Vaca Mountains. This sells for $626 on average. And guess what? Number seven, another Screaming Eagle. A blend of commonly features a mix of Cab, Merlot, and Cabernet Franc. Cabernet Sauvignon. I should say Sauvignon. Whenever I ask people what the second most popular wine is in the United States, people guess Cabernet. And I go, Cabernet Franc? No. And they go, no, Cabernet Sauvignon. So I guess I should say Sauvignon too. This is the sister wine to the estate flagship Cabernet Sauvignon, which got so much money. The wine currently costs an average of $609. When it was first released, it was priced at only $225 a bottle. But wine has obviously jumped up. The scoring has been in the upper 90s consistently, but I guess Screaming Eagle is doing that. Number eight, Bryant Family Vineyard Bettina Property Red. The Bordeaux blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Gervaux comes direct from Reverend winemaker David Arbro's famed vineyards in the St. Helena and Howell Mountain AVAs. Madrona Cervellos and Lucia Howell Mountain. Those are all AVAs in Napa. The 2012 Bettina received a score of 96 from Robert Parker, and its average price is $541. Number nine, Abreu Vineyards Thorvillus Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa. The 2011 received a score of 96 from Robert Parker. He was quoted as saying, "Kudos to David Abreu and Brad Grimes, not only for their obsessive perfectionist work in the vineyards, but for producing wines as unmanipulated, pure, and world-class as money can buy." Excuse me. Normally, blend dominated by Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, with small additions of Petit Verdot and Merlot, it will cost around $533 a bottle. Now, these are all 750 bottles, mind you, too. And the last one on the list of 10, Schrader Cellars CCS Beckstoffer to Callon Vineyards Cabernet Sauvignon. You know, you wonder how they can get all that on the bottle, on the label. The second Schrader Cellars entry is on the list. It's received full marks for 2 years running from Robert Parker. He has scored in the upper 90s consistently. The Schrader Cellars uses the clone 4 Cabernet. All right. The clone is classically formed with a tighter berry formation and thicker skin that gives the wine a strong intensity of flavor and an average price tag of $523. Clone 4. It'd be fun to try it just to taste the Clone 4 and see what it says or how it's tasting. Now, that was California. The 10 most expensive wines in California. But the world's most expensive wines. Now, here's where you start looking at some major money. excuse me. There aren't that many places in the world outside of Burgundy where the wines made from vineyard on one side of the track cost $200 and on the other side of the track can bring you $3,000. The top vineyards are just a few acres at the most and have such a reputation that people will go absolutely loopy for them. And simple economics, supply outstrips demand, so the prices go way up. Which is why 8 of the world's most expensive wines are from this golden slope in eastern France. The Moselle River, which winds its way through southwestern Germany, contributes a couple of Rieslings, but Napa Valley, which is also famous for its prices, just missed out on the top spot. Number one on the world's most expensive wines is Domaine de la Romanée, Conti Grand Cru, Côte des Nuits, France. And I'm sure I destroyed that all the way through. There are no prizes for guessing number one. DRC, as it is known affectionately by people who will absolutely never try to get to try it, particularly me, has an average price of $13,346 a bottle. And that does seem insane, even for those sellers who like that. I wonder if Burn Steakhouse, they've got an enormous cellar, or some of these others around the country that have it. I wonder if they have one of these sitting in the shelf there. But when you consider that the care that is taken to make this wine and the fact that it comes from the Romani Conti Vineyard, which is probably the most valuable 1.81 hectare on this planet Earth, and it's almost worth it. Also, to give it even more distinction, it is the most counterfeited wine in the world. So, you know, if you say, hey, I've got a DRC for you here for only $2,000, it is, I would venture to say, counterfeited. It's not an original. Number two, Egon Müller. Scharfhofburger, Riesling, Trockenbaren Auslese from Moselle, Germany. Oh boy, another destruction of a language. Rieslings may have a reputation of being perennially uncool, but this wine proves you don't have to be cool to be worth a ton of money. Although, you know, Rieslings, I don't think Rieslings are uncool. I don't know whoever wrote this. I have to disagree. People like Rieslings, you know. It's one of the premier grapes. The grapes from this wine come from the Scharfholzberg vineyard in the Saar Valley of the Moselle. and are dusted with just the right amount of Botrytis cinerea. Now, the cinerea, this is the noble rot. I've described it before. To make for a traditionally sweet and balanced wine. He says, like many Trockenberry and Oss-Leis wines, it's only made in absolutely killer years and in tiny quantities. So to get your hand on the bottle, it's harder than you think. If you can even find it, have yourself money in the pocket, because this is going to cost you around $8,339. Is it worth it, though? Well, we won't question that part of that. Number three, Domaine Lefebvre Montrachet Grand Cru from Côte de Beaune, France. This is the first of two on this list that comes from the arguably greatest white wine vineyard in the world, La Montrachet. The hillside in southern Burgundy is perfect for the complexity of the wines it creates, well-balanced gold medal after gold medal comes from there. The Domaine Lefebvre is the top of the heap, focused almost entirely on producing wines from Chardonnay. So there's plenty of opportunity to perfect it, the La Montrachet Grand Cru. And it shows it in the $5,774 per bottle price tag. Number four, Domaine Leroy Mussigny Grand Cru from the Côte de Noyers, France. Back to the reds. This is a Pinot Noir, actually, close to the DRC. That was really, really expensive. The DRC, we're up here, we're talking about $13,000 plus a bottle. This is a little bit cheaper. We're not up that high, but the proprietors in the area that it's growing in is right there. 1990 saw the two go their separate ways, though. And so, therefore, the other one, has got very expensive wine. This one comes in. They've had wines in the top 10 continuously, and they're selling those with only $5,463 as opposed to $13,000 in the same area. So, you know, there you go. Save your money. And I'm sure that one is also counterfeited a lot. The number five, Domaine Georges and Christophe Remire Mussigny Grand Cru Côte de Noyers, France. Whoa. This vineyard has a good reason to be on the list. It's winning combo of chalky limestone soils and southeasterly directions puts it in one of the best terroirs in the country. It's along with Corton, it is only one of two Grand Crus that actually make both red and white wines. The wine, a Pinot Noir, hardly reaches Mondavi levels of distribution, though, and it is very rare, sought after, and averages about $5,249 a bottle. Number six, Josh Prum Weiliner Sonneur Riesling Trockenbaron Oschlesa. Another one. This Trockenbaron Oschlesa is made by one of Moselle's most famous producers, and that's J.J. Prum. With the family is making wine above the Moselle River for hundreds of years. So, you know, they basically know what they're doing. Made from the Riesling grapes, selected more carefully than just about anything. Wine Searcher gave it 98 points and an average price of $4,745. Seven. This is a Domaine de la Romane Conte Montrachet Grand Cru from Côte de Beaune, France. Well, most of these domains' famous bottlings are at the northern end. The Montrachet is from the south, and they only make Chardonnay, by the way. It holds, the vineyard holds some of the rarest of the Domaine's Grand Cru wines and celebrated internationally. The price, $4,534. Just to show that they are that good. Number 8, Domaine Leroy Chambertin Grand Cru from the Côte des Noix, France. Another Pinot Noir. Surrounding vineyards have tried to latch on to the success of this, but have not been able to do it so far. It's the Chambertin is still, like De Montrachet, the king daddy of the area. It also averages a hefty price on Wine Searcher of $3,719. Whoa. 9, Domaine Leroy Richebourg Grand Cru, again, Côte des Noix, France. This one, it's from people who know what they're doing. They've been making wines, again, for centuries there. The only wine that have had a vintage in the last 10 years are allowed on the list, and this is one of them. Even so, you will have to spend $3,004 a bottle for a Domaine Leroy Richebourg. So, you know, it's not cheap. And last one, a Domaine du Comte Ligure Belure La Romanée Grand Cru from the Côte des Noix, France. And I'm sure I destroyed that name. This is from Burgundian list of wines. The Screaming Eagle would come in at number 11 behind this, but this one is number 10, the Screaming Eagle I just told you about in California. This wine has average price of $2,983, beating the California wine by about $100. It's in a beautiful area, and the wine has been scored in the upper 90s consistently over the years. Now, let's not stop there, but let's talk about the most expensive wines in Spain. All right. Tesa La Monja in Toro. This is number one new entry for this list. The Tempranillo from Toro, the Spanish word for bow, has taken over. Robust and red, made from century-old pre-phylloxera vines. Non-grafted roots have been digging deep into the loamy soil for decades, and it states here that it's a mineral-rich berries. The first effort was in 1998, which scored 100 points from Robert Parker in 2004. This particular one averages $1,041 a bottle on Wine Searcher and comes in at 98 points by Robert Parker. So that's number one, 1,041. Spanish wine. Domino de Pingas from Ribera de Duro. This is the second most expensive one. It's been more than 20 years since Pingas' induction to Parker's High Rollers Club, and the price tag on this is running $813. Third, again, these are the Spanish most expensive. Alvaro Palacios La Emirta Villas Viñas and Perro de Oliva. I'm sorry. I don't know Spanish. I don't know how to pronounce these. The black volcanic soil is the reason for this being so well rated. It is undisputed best vineyard in the land and the region. It's also on pre-phylloxera Grenache vines that were planted in 1900 and 1940. Since the 1990s, this wine has brought the Perrault to prominence, and the Vinci's has also continuously been delivering very consistently high, critically praised wines. $672 for this particular vintage. Here I go again. You ready for this? Descendiente de J. Palacio La Ferrana in Bierzo. The Bierzo region, steep hilly land, distinct terroir that is putting out some phenomenal wines. It's about 65-year-old vines in the area. The wine lands in this spot because of the my most venture with an average price is $653 for this particular wine. Oh, geez. I'm going to have to get back to California wines. I can pronounce those again. Number five, Bodegas Valdura 12, Anos Gran Reserva Especial from Ribera del Douro. It is not a new wine, although it's new on this list. The Garcia family saw the potential in Ribera del Douro before it became internationally recognized in 1984. Now, 25 years later, they are pulling some prime vineyards and prime grapes out of the area. The 12 bottles goes for an average price of $464. Well, that's really starting to get cheap. That's not much. And number six, Vega Celia Unico Gran Reserva by another Ribera del Douro. This is also the average price of this is $393 a bottle. Again, Tempranillo plantings along with Cabernet Sauvignon. About 20% Cab with 80% Tempranillo on this blend. Vega Silica Unico Reserva Especial, another Ribera del Douro. Not vintage, but hey, not a problem. This is coming out with some great wine. Doesn't tell you what this one is. I guess you should know if you know those wines. I don't. The soils, areas, and all that. $328 a bottle. And number eight, R. Lopez de Heredia Vina Tandanoya Vina Basconia Gran Reserva Roja. Since 1877, not a single grape has been used in any of the wines from here except from this one particular vineyard and area. Only worthy Tempranillo, Grenache, Mazuela, and Graciano grapes create this wine. And they produce anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 bottles a year, averaging $316 a bottle. Domino de Pingas Amelia from Ribera del Douro again. This is in the number nine spot, $301 a bottle on average cost. They only produce about 300 bottles a year on this particular one. So if you get an opportunity, it's centuries-old Tempranillo vines. And so it's not a big, heavy big producer because of the vines being so old. And the last one from France, thank goodness, because I don't have to destroy, from Spain, so I don't have to destroy the names anymore. Bodegas Hermanos Sater, Vina Sater Paces, or Pejus, Ribera del Douro again. And he's pretty much taken over as the premier winemaker of Spain. 80% Tempranillo, 20% Cabernet Sauvignon, and a little bit of Merlot sprinkled in, $298 a bottle. So it's actually dropped down from last year. It dropped $54 from last year. So it is a good opportunity to pick it up now if you're looking. Last list I've got for you here is out of Australia. And everybody knows Australian wine, Syrahs, and, you know, a lot of the wines coming from Australia and what they're doing. So, I just saw a note here on the side of this. Penfolds launches a wine priced at $168,000. Geez, I haven't read this article here. We will read it together. Penfolds is unveiled as the most expensive wine ever, sequestered in a bespoke wooden cabinet and costing $168,000. Launched at a tasting in Moscow, the cabinet holds a glass ampoule filled with 750 milliliters of 2004 Kalimna Block 42 Cabernet Sauvignon from South Australia's Barossa Valley. By contrast, the unadorned 750 bottle of the 2004 Block 42 currently retails at an average price of $661. But buyers of the ampoule will be paying to join a select group. Just 12 of the beautiful, thoughtful, unique items have been produced. The hand-blown glass ampoule is suspended in its cabinet by a plumb bob of gray glass. So there you go. They have a picture of it here. It is gorgeous. It is gorgeous. Not $168,000 gorgeous, but it is gorgeous. Penfolds commissioned four South Australian craftsmen to design the ampoule and its surrounding structure. Glass sculptor Nick Mount, metalsmith Hendrik Forster, cabinet maker Andrew Bartlett, and glass blower Ray Leek. According to Penfolds, it provides a truly memorable experimental and sensory engagement. When it comes time comes for the 12 disciples of Kalima Block 42 to break open their treasures, the company suggests that considerable help will be required. A senior member of Penfolds' winemaking team will personally attend a special opening ceremony for the owner, essentially your very own masterclass. The winemaker will travel to the destination of choice, where the ampoule will be ceremoniously removed from its glass plumb bob casing and opened using a specially designed tungsten-tipped sterling silver scrib snap. The winemaker will then prepare the wine using a beautifully crafted sterling silver taste vin. The 10-acre Block 42 was planted in 1885, making it the oldest planting of the continuous operation of vines, Cabernet Sauvignon vines in the world. The wine was first released in the 1950s, but only a handful of times since due to the low-yielding nature of Block 42. The Cabernet Sauvignon grapes from the site were blended into early bottlings of Penfolds Grange and also make an appearance in today's Bin 707. $168,000. Yeah, okay. Most expensive wines from Australia. Chris, number one, Chris Ringland, Three Rivers Dry Grown Syrahs from the Barossa Valley. This is the most expensive wine in Australia. Hardly surprising. Robert Parker has been a big fan of Chris Ringland's wine for years and given it 400-point ratings in seven different vintages. The average price has actually fallen from $752 to $654. So, hey, you know, it's dry vintages and stuff. Number two, out of Australia, Torbreck the Laird out of Barossa Valley. This enters the chart at number two with an average price of $638. The wine didn't feature in the 2014 rundown, but It is up to number two this year. It doesn't have a whole lot of vintages under its belt. The average price of the 2014 is up to $791 now, though. Penfolds Grange Bin 95, the world-famous Australian wine of all time. Grange has been remarkably stable, and the price and availability is coming in at an average price of $538. Or in 2014, it was only $11 a bottle. Wow. Remains one of the most sought-after wines from Australia. Long history in the family and everything has contributed to that, along with high scores by Robert Parker. Four, Henschek's Hill of Grace Syrahs out of Eden Valley. This is the Barossa's much cooler neighbor. It one place below the 2014 performance of it. It's right there with Grange. Its average price is $537, $538 for the Penfolds Grange 95 right above it. Comes with a price, availability, and popularity that is piques interest on all levels. Number five, Bass Phillip Reserve Pinot Noir Gibson. This is another new arrival on this list. It is Pinot Noir. After all the Syrahs on the Australian list and everything, Robert Parker praised this for the Côte de Noix-like characteristics. The 2010 version, he praises the greatest Australasian Pinot ever made. $485. Chris Ringland, Hoffman Vineyard Syrahs, Barossa Valley. This will set you back at $421 a bottle on average. This wine was made from blocks tended by Adrian Hoffman, who is the star winemaker and vineyardist of the North Barossa Vintners range. Low production, and it remains on the list because of the expense. Two Hands Wines, My Hands, Syrahs from Barossa Valley. Barossa Valley is just running away with these out of Australia. It seems like the area there is just insufficient vintages previously, so they weren't on the list. Excuse me. First year, 2014, $229 an average price. Now it is jumping up, $403 a bottle. Number eight, Chris Ringland's Randall's Hill Syrahs. Again, Barossa Valley, $396 a bottle. Coming from the same vintage that produces the Chris Ringland Syrahs. 1995, he abandoned Randall's Hill and went to Barossa Valley and producing some stuff great there. But then a section of vineyard planted in 1999 in Randall's Hill, and it is producing some phenomenal wines out of there. Rosedon Sand Scrub Syrahs, again, Barossa Valley. This has a price tag of $365, a limited run. It's scored 96 across, average score of 96 across the six vintages that's been available so far, so it's been consistently up there. Number 10, Greenock Creek Ryanfeld Road Syrahs. This is a Barossa Valley Syrahs, as we probably would have guessed. Average price, $315. It averages about $303 now, dropped down a little bit. Average scores of 95 across 17 available vintages, a 95 average over 17 vintages. That's pretty consistent and pretty good. So can't complain too much about that. And I think, yeah, we are done with our most expensive wine nights. This is just something I've been wanting to pass on to you, and it was a good opportunity with Mike not with us tonight. So tune in next week. There's nothing happening this weekend. Next weekend at the winery, we have our San Antonio Art Festival. Now, no, not San Antonio, Texas, San Antonio, Florida. Little small town north of Tampa in Pasco County, right next to St. Leo University. St. Leo University is a little small campus, beautiful little campus in the center of Pasco County. Nice hilly campus, just a beautiful campus. And a fact for you, St. Leo University is the largest enrolled university in the country. Now you say, no, can't be. Yes, but the St. Leo University has military people signed up on online classes that is, tremendous amount, of military people signed up on online classes. Because of that, they are the largest enrollment of any university in the country. And they, I get people coming into the winery all the time. They come in and from around the world, and they said they just want to come by and see the campus because they are actually online graduates of St. Leo, or they'll come just so they can actually graduate from St. Leo at the campus. So it's pretty cool. But I go on about St. Leo. The San Antonio, little town right next to it, Marin County, California. I don't know if you're familiar. Marin County, California, just north of San Francisco. Marin County, California has been noted for years as a starving artist town. They do sculptures and paintings and everything. I mean, it's just metalwork, all sorts of stuff there. St. Leo is our Marin County for the Bay Area here. There's lots of different people there. They do some great work. Wonderful artwork and stuff like that. So we are having our, what is this, engineer? This our third or fourth? Third annual, okay. It was the fourth for the Pet Fest, okay. This is the third annual San Antonio Artist Festival. This is a tribute, actually, to an artist that just passed away recently. I'm sorry. Clayton Burge Jr. It is a tribute to him. He recently passed away. A good friend of many of them there in that area. So we're going to have a festival. We're going to have a festival with all these people in it. We're going to have a festival with everyone showing up and talking about the how he helped them in the life, and they're going to have all their wares for sale and all that other good stuff, and it will be a good time for all. Yes, we are always pet friendly. If you want to bring your pet while you're there visiting, you may do so. That is a week from this Saturday, and hopefully Matthew decides not to do a great big circle out in the water like some people are saying he might and come back at us. So Matthew should go out in the ocean and just disappear, because we're done with him. So we'll give you more information next week on the Pasco Pet, or on the, I'm sorry, on the San Antonio Art Festival. And have yourself a wonderful week. If you are in Florida or up the East Coast of the United States, hunker down. Get out of the storms. Don't take any chances and all that. Don't be crossing over water if you don't know how deep it is. That could be quite serious too, and stuff like that. Be safe, be careful, be sure to pick up wine and drink wine. Always a good thing to help the time pass while you're waiting for the hurricanes to pass. Anyone else in the rest of the country, we're fine. We'll be back next week, which is, I don't even know the date. Let's see, today's the 6th, 7 days, this will be the 13th. Yeah, that would be about right then. The 13th. So we'll be back on the 13th, 7 o'clock. with some more all about wine. Also, if you have anybody who wants to be on the show, if you know anybody who might be a good guest or something, let me know. I'm always looking for guests, and I will get back to guests, I promise you. You know, I'm not going to just abandon guests. It's just that I have not had the time, I'm sorry to say. So, have a wonderful week. Take care of yourselves. We will see you next week. Well, come on and play. TTFN, y'all. There.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.